I want to go to Venice with you, hear the gondoliers. I want to go to Venice, 'cause we're running out of years. I want to go to Venice with you, kiss in San Marco, like that time in Venice long ago. Oh, I want to go to Venice with you, cross the bridge of sighs, like that time in Venice underneath Venetian skies. I want to go to Venice with you, want to go to Venice with you, want to go to Venice and see Venice in your eyes. Oh, I want to go to Venice with you, for the tide will rise. I want to go to Venice before the music dies. I want to go to Venice with you, sail the Grand Canal, be there with you in Venice when it's Carnival. Oh, I want to go to Venice with you, cross the Bridge of Sighs, like that time in Venice underneath Venetian skies. I want to go to Venice with you, want to go to Venice with you, want to go to Venice and see Venice in your eyes. And maybe we can't find those days of Venice long ago, but maybe all I'm trying to say is I still love you so. Oh, I want to go to Venice with you, cross the Bridge of Sighs, like that time in Venice underneath Venetian skies. I want to go to Venice with you, want to go to Venice with you, want to go to Venice and once again see Venice in your eyes.
There you go. That's the second track from Brendan Graham's debut album. The album is called The Arrows of Time, and Brendan's a great singer-songwriter, well known for songs he wrote for other people, but this is his first venture, I believe, as a songwriter to do his own stuff, and I'm delighted he joins me from County Mayo. Brendan, it's lovely to talk to you.
And likewise, and thanks very much for having me on, and hello to you and all in Donegal and all your listeners up there.
Little did I think I would be talking to the man who wrote Rock and Roll Kids, The Voice, and You Raise Me Up. But Brendan, I have to say congratulations on the new album. I was sitting listening to it the last 2 days in the house, and I just love it. That's the second track I played of it. I Want to Go to Venice. Have you not been to Venice?
I have. I wanted to go back the second time. That's why I wrote the song.
I was in it once, you know. I was on a trip over to La Garda, and we went up to Venice for a day, and it was good crack. Tell us, when did the notion... No. Go on. When did the notion come to do the album yourself? It's your debut album, The Arrow of Time.
Well, I never wanted to be a singer. I was always happy with other people singing my songs. And I also recognised that I was, you know, particularly with new songs, asking a singer to take a risk, to go out before an audience and sing something that hasn't been tried. And, of course, if the song isn't right, the audience would be blaming the singer instead of the songwriter. And if I was in the back of the hall, I could sneak out and no one would notice me.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought maybe I should put myself on the line and just to do this thing at this stage, to take the risk. So it's only quite recently that I thought of it, and people were encouraging me to do it, and so I thought, well, I might as well have a go. And the other thing that prompted me to do it was this, that songwriters will know, any songwriters you have listening will know, that when you write a song initially, you get into a space and you get a particular feeling.
Yeah.
And I thought some of the songs on the album have been recorded before in different types of versions, and I wanted to bring the songs back to the feeling I had when I was writing them. So stripped back, simple, and more storyline orientated rather than production. So that was the second reason. And I can say to your listeners, sense doesn't always come with age. So I decided for my 80th, I would record my debut album.
Yeah, no, it's great, as you mentioned there, about stripping back the songs. I love that, you know, because one time I was out in Nashville and Don Schlitz was there, the guy who wrote The Gambler, and he'd wrote lots of number ones for American artists. And he used to do a thing in the Bluebird Cafe every last Tuesday night of the month. And he would just go up with his guitar and he'd say, here's a song I wrote before Kenny Rogers recorded it. And he'd just sing it with the guitar, like you on the album with the piano, you know. And it's just great to hear, especially the person who actually wrote the song singing it, because I love your version of Now Rock and Roll Kids. You know, I know it was a big hit for Charlie and Paul, but your version is just... I was just sitting there listening and I said, I could imagine now when Brendan wrote that song and he was just here and putting the words and the music.
Well, the boys came into the studio with me on that one.
Yeah.
The two lads came in and dug me out, because I thought it would be interesting to revisit songs like Rock and Roll Kids. And then Ralph Loveland actually played, who co-composed You Raise Me Up With Me, he actually played the piano on that track, and I spoke it. And I spoke it because there's so many great versions, pop and classical versions of it, that I couldn't possibly hold my own above them. So it went right back to the start, basically him and I just doing it together. And then I wasn't going to sing the voice because I wouldn't be able to, but Emma Quinn had a brilliant idea, and she said to me, well, why don't you speak it and I'll do a vocalese melody around it. So she came into the studio as well, and we did that, and that it was very special to do those three songs with the people who were there at the start of their lives. So yeah, that was fun.
Rock and Roll Kids, when did you write it, just before for the Eurovision in 94, or had you wrote it a couple of years beforehand? How did you come about?
Well, the story, I think, is fairly well known, that it was just a song. I never intended it to be a Eurovision song.
Yeah.
But when I had it written, I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to get a song in the Eurovision that had no bells and whistles? And there were lots of bells and whistles and fellas on bicycles and dancers at that time too.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wouldn't it be great just to have a song with nothing in it? So when I wrote it, I submitted it for 2 years to the National Song Contest, and it didn't get picked. And then I decided I'd stick with it for the third year because I believed in the song, and submitted it again. And everyone had said to me, sure, if they didn't pick it for the last 2 years, they're not going to pick it now.
Yeah.
But they did, and the rest is history.
And had you got Paul and Charlie to do it originally? Did you ask Paul and Charlie to do it, or did that come out?
Well, I asked Paul originally to do it, and then I thought, I was thinking of him doing it with just piano. And then I thought, I'd worked a lot with Charlie over the years, and I just thought their voices would work well together. And Charlie is a very sensitive guitar player. So I asked Paul, would he be okay if I asked Charlie? And then I asked Charlie if he'd do it. So the two of them agreed, and it just clicked wonderfully. They just complimented each other. And RTE had suggested I use an orchestra for the Eurovision, which we didn't use in the National Song Contest. But I said, no, this is just a conversation in the kitchen, so I don't want any orchestra or anything. And in fact, Charlie said to me, I mean, the boys were exposed. There was just the two of them going on stage with 300 million people. So Charlie said to me at one stage, would you not even think of the string quartet, Brendan? And I said, no, Charlie, you guys will deliver it. And indeed they did.
Oh, big time. I remember listening to it on the National Song Contest. And the minute I heard it, I said, that song is going to represent Ireland in the Eurovision. And I said, it's going to win the Eurovision as well. I just seen it was just, as you say, without all the glamour and all the thing. But God, in the last couple of years now, it's the songwriting has gone out of the Eurovision altogether now, isn't it, Brendan? It's not about the songs anymore.
They should call it Euro Video Vision because it's all about the visuals.
Yeah.
And I still think a good song staged properly without the distraction. You see, you're caught up with the lights, the dancing and the gyrations, and the song is kind of lost the way it is at the moment.
But I
at times have been tempted to enter it again, but as someone said to me, if you entered it again and you lost, that's the time that people will remember, not the two times you won. So I've stayed away from it.
Did it take you long to write that song when you wrote it? You know, when you were writing it, did you? I know you're a great storyteller.
Rather Our Kids.
Yeah. Did it take you long to write? Because
it did. Initially, I wanted it. I had written the song with a verse to the song is sort of reminiscing back to the 60s when you were a teenager, and I was trying to do something for the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and Ken Stewart, who was a great disc jockey on RT, was a great friend of mine and a great songman. So I asked him to come over and listen to it. And he said, oh, you have much too many verses in it. So I cut it back to be down to the 3 minutes. So it was quite a bit of work eventually chiseling it down, as most songs are. It's easy enough to write them, and then you have to put on your critic's hat and say what's not working. So, which is, you know, what I always do with songs. So I usually sit with them a long time before I let them out.
Yeah, the first time I heard it too, Brendan, I could relate to it straight away. Way back in the 60s, I would have been that era. And I remember, I wasn't broadcasting way back then, but myself and a friend of ours, we used to sing back home in Sligo and just listen to the lyrics. We were just the rock and roll kids, you know, and it was great. And then the voice, 2 years later, was a different sort of song, wasn't it? It was more a kind of... very Irishy type.
It was very different, and again, it was a song just written. It wasn't intended to be a Eurovision song, but because I thought it was so different from what was going in, that if it got through, it would go on. And the first year I submitted that to RTE, it didn't get selected, and the second year it did. So. And of course, a totally different arrangement. Bill Whelan did a great arrangement of it, and I had decided to put a sort of a folk band with Emer, who would, you know, in a way contrast with her beautiful soprano voice. So that was different, and again, you know, people seem to like it. But there's a man up there now in the show near you. I want to say hello to him, Fergal Murray. Fergal played piano and produced the album that you're featuring,
did he?
Arrow of Time. And he's a joy to work with. I've worked with him before on the Cathy Jordan solo album. And I know he's listening there up in Enniskillen tonight.
So, and where did you record it, Brendan?
We recorded it in Dave McEwen's Ventry Studios in Balbriggan in Dublin.
Excellent.
And over a 2-year period, and we were lucky to have some great artists come in and play on it. And Anto Drennan played guitar on it, and he had played bass on the original recording of Rock and Roll Kids. So there were some nice recirclings like that.
Yeah, there's another song I played earlier on in the show when I was mentioning that you were coming on, The Song Man. And who's the girl that comes in near the end of that? Who's the girl who sings near the end of it?
Oh, yeah, we had two backing singers. That girl is Carly Cunha, and she lives somewhere up near your way as well. And we decided to have that sort of break in the song, and I just thought it'd be lovely to have her doing that part, you know, the Leonard Cohen part. So, as I say, we had some, you know, mighty artists coming in to help us out. And that's a very recent song I wrote with Fergal and Camille O'Sullivan, and it sort of reflects my view of art and song and the question whether art and song can actually change anything in the world, because that song is quite dark, and, you know, maybe we can't, maybe the songwriter's job is just to observe and record, and but has no real effect on change, and sometimes maybe it has. So that was the theme of that song, and it was very, very interesting to record that.
There was another great song. I enjoyed all the songs on the album. Another good song that I liked on it was If There Was No Tomorrow.
What If There's No Tomorrow? That's also a very new song that I wrote with Fergal again and Camille O'Sullivan. And again, it was just, you know, the way we all have our little grievances and fall out with people and, you know, get upset about things. And I just thought, if we knew there was going to be no tomorrow,
exactly,
you'd push all that stuff aside and you'd just get on. And the whole notion of the song is, what if there's no tomorrow, would we just make up and dance the night away? So while it's a bit dark, there's a bit of hope in it as well, I hope.
Yeah, there's lovely stories in each of the song, you know, completely different, you know. Then you have the one, Turn to Me. That's a lovely song as well.
Yeah, thank you. That's one of my favourites. And I wrote that many years ago with Brian Kennedy. And the whole notion of it is that, you know, as life goes on and time passes by, we, you know, need to turn to somebody else, but maybe that person can turn to us, and, you know, you can just bring comfort to each other as the years pass. And so again, kept that song very simple. My philosophy is, let the song speak. That, the, you know, okay, you need the music, and the music is critically important, but people need to hear the story, and then sometimes they relate that to their own lives. So that was what I was trying to achieve in the album, to let the song speak.
Yeah, Brendan, you have some great talent, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. You know, when did you start first? When did you realise you had this gift that you could write songs? How long have you been doing it?
Well, I wrote my first lyrics in 1968.
Yeah.
I had emigrated to London. I took the mail boat like most young fellas. And the Beatles were just starting to get huge at the time.
Yeah.
And Eleanor Rigby was out as a song. And there's a character in Eleanor Rigby called Father McKenzie.
That's right.
And I thought he writes sermons that nobody listens to, and he picks up the church, the rice in the church. And I thought Paul McCartney should have given him a song on his own. So I wrote these lyrics called Father Dickens on a red serviette in a Chinese restaurant in Harlesden, where I used to go to get dumpling soup because I couldn't afford proper dinners at the time. Yeah. And I sent the lyrics back to Tommy Swarbrick, who was in Joe Dolan's band at the time in Mullingar. And then I went off to Australia, and then, lo and behold, the following Christmas, this album arrived, Johnny McAvoy orchestral album called With an Eye to Your Ear. And there, between the 59th Bridge Street song and Here, There and Everywhere, was Father Dickens. And Spotlight was the magazine at the time.
That's
and
right.
It rated as one of the three best songs in the album. Sure, I was over the moon. Check. And then when I got my first royalty check for £1.15, I thought, well, if I can't do better than this, I should give up the old songwriting.
Yeah.
So that was the start, but I didn't really go full time until I was made redundant in my day job when I was 48. That was 1993. And I I decided I'd have a go full-time at the songwriting. So then Rock and Roll Kids turned up, so, and then The Voice. So I actually started to earn a living from writing songs. So I kept at it, and being made redundant is not a great thing, but it's just worked out for me, so it was a bit of luck.
Yeah, I remember once talking to Mick, the lad who wrote Past the Point of Rescue. What's his name again?
Mick Hanley.
I remember him telling me that was the first time he could buy dinner for the family when he wrote that song and Hal Ketchum recorded it.
That's right. That was a great song. I know Mick well, and I have great admiration for his songwriting.
Yeah. Another song I've been playing on the station here for years, and I only realised it when I was reading a little bit about you. Back in 1976, you wrote When for Red Hurley.
Oh, When for Red Hurley.
I used to play that.
Yeah.
I used to do a show band section here, and I used to play Red Hurley. He had some voice, and well, he still has a good voice, but that was a big song for him.
He still has. Yeah, well, the only thing about When was in my early days of songwriting, yeah. And I didn't realise that songs needed to have hooks, and there was no great hook in When. So Red made a lot more out of the song than was in the song. But I learned from working with him what sounds singers like to sing, and I learned that thing that songs need hooks. People need these earworms to latch onto. So, 1976, my God.
And then in 2002, the big one, You Raise Me Up, that was recorded by all different... Josh Groban, Westlife, to name but a few, you know, two different artists would have had their own kind of fan bases for that song as well.
Yeah, well, that song happened by random, as so much in my life has happened. After The Voice, I was in London for a meeting with my music publishers at the time, Warner Chappell, and they said, "What are you working on now?" So I said, "Well, strange thing is happening. There's this female character appearing out of Ireland in the mid-1800s, and I'm fashioning songs around her." So I told them a bit about the Great Famine and all that sort of thing, and they seemed to be sort of amazed by it and so on. So I came back to Dublin. I was living in Dublin at the time, and I got a call on the following Monday, would I come back to London and go to HarperCollins book publishers and send over the story I had told the music publishers. But she wrote no story. I was trying to write songs. I had no thoughts of books. And so I stayed up for the next 3 days and three nights, and I scribbled out the outline of a story. Went back to London on Friday to HarperCollins boardroom. Couldn't believe I was there, and thinking, what the hell am I doing here? I saw all these books, these bestsellers. So I went up to the boardroom, and there was eight people seated around this big table with the managing director at the far end. And I'd left my glasses in the taxi from the airport, so I couldn't read what I'd written. But a strange thing happened. I had this out-of-body experience where I was in the far corner of the boardroom watching myself telling them the story.
God.
And I knew before I finished they were going to offer me a book deal, which they did.
Yeah.
So my first book was The Whitest Flower, and it got to number two on Christmas week here in Ireland, just behind Maeve Binchy. And Fionnuala Sherry from Secret Garden gave a present of that book to Rolf Loveland of Secret Garden. And he had a melody that he had no lyrics for, but when he read the book, he thought maybe Brendan could come up with lyrics to his melody, which was called Silent Story. So they got in touch with me, and that melody, Silent Story, turned into You Raise Me Up. So it was all random, one thing connecting to another.
Yeah, I love the version you do of it on the album where you speak it rather than sing it. It works great, you know, with the music.
And Rolf played the piano for me, so it was lovely to be reconnected with him. Yeah, it gives it a different vibe, I think.
And I believe you worked with Celtic Women as well at some stage. Was I reading that right somewhere? The Celtic Women?
Celtic Women recorded, I think, about eight or nine of my songs over the years, and did a great job with them. And did a lot with them. Did a lot with Secret Garden, and they had guests with Elaine Page and so on. So I've been fortunate that some really fine artists have recorded my songs.
Yeah, how many songs would you have wrote roughly? You know, would you have an idea how many you'd have in your catalogue, roughly?
Are you counting the good ones or the bad ones as
the
well?
The good ones and the... Do you know, it's funny, Brendan, you know, I'd be playing songs of albums, you know, and say you get a Randy Travis album or something like that, and you might play the same three or four songs from a long time. But if you're listening to the full album, you'll come across and say, God, there's a song, you know, a forgotten song, and it might be as good as some of the ones that were the big number one hits, you know? And you'd give it a spin every now and then. Something new, you know. It mightn't have been a hit on the album, but yet it'd be a good song.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I've had a couple of hundred recordings, but I also have boxes of songbooks with unfinished songs in them. So that's how those two songs came about, The Songman and What If There's No Tomorrow. I had them almost finished, but not finished. So I asked Fergal and Camille if they'd work on them with me.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that a little bit recently, where now a lot of the songs I started are rubbish and should never be finished, but there's been a few that are worthwhile. So I've been doing that a bit recently, going to people and say, look, would you like to work on this with me, and we'll see if we can finish it. So I'd say I have another couple of hundred unfinished songs. And one of these days I'll get around to looking at some of them, I hope.
And come here, there's no sign of you stopping anyway.